ताम येन भूतरे स्वयं रूपा कदम्यहम् ददति स्वापदन्तिकम् वन्देहांसि गुरौ श्रीयुतपदकमलम् श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवंश्च शिरोपां सग्रजातां सहगनावन्त सजीवम् साद्वैतं सवधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदां सहगनावन्तं शिवशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धुजगत्पते गोपेश गोपिककान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते तप्त कंचन गौरंगी राधे वृंदवनेश्वरी मनुसुत देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे बताय महात्रियाय मा पुरो विभूर्निर्मय क्षेत्रया दमुषु पुरुष मुक्त गुणां सदाश सदसत्मक कृषिष्ठ भगवान् वचांसि मे ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this is again chapter 1 of Bhagavad Gita text 30. I'll just read Sanskrit translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Nacha shaknam myavastatum brahmachiva chame manaha nimittani chapashyami viparitani keshavam. I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune, O Krishna, killer of the Keshi demon. Purport. Due to his impatience, Arjuna was unable to stand on the battlefield and he was forgetting himself on account of this weakness of his mind. Excessive attachment for material things puts a man in such a bewildered condition of existence. Bayam vitiye binibeshata syat. Such fearfulness and loss of mental equilibrium take place in persons who are too affected by material conditions. Arjuna envisioned only painful reverses in the battlefield. He would not be happy even by gaining victory over the foe. The words nimittani viparitani are significant. When a man sees only frustration in his expectations, he thinks, why am I here? Everyone is interested in himself and his own welfare. No one is interested in the Supreme Self. Arjuna is showing ignorance of his real self-interest by Krishna's will. One's real self-interest lies in Vishnu or Krishna. The conditioned soul forgets this and therefore suffers material pains. Arjuna thought that his victory in the battle would only be a cause of lamentation for him. Nacha shaknom yavas tatum brahmati vichame manaha nimittani chapashyami viparitani keshava. I am now unable to stand here any longer. I am forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I see only causes of misfortune. O Krishna, killer of the Keshi demon. So, Keshava, or Krishna, who is the killer of Keshi demon, is the Lord who can free us from material misconceptions. And in order to understand what we have to be freed from, first we have to know what are the misconceptions. And as we were mentioning, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains in his books such as Sri Krishna Samhita and Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita that different demons in Krishna's pastimes represent different anarthas or obstacles on the path of devotional service. And specifically, Keshi demon represents one of the last anarthas on the path of devotional service, which is considering oneself to be a great devotee, guru or acharya. And this anartha is happening when one is influenced by the desire to lord it over other people and material nature. This is why we came to this world, to try to be God, not to serve God. And so this is very amazing that at least we are trying to change that mentality and try to serve the Supreme Lord and His servants. And in order to understand what this anartha is, we will read the specific description from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is chapter 37, the killing of the demons Keshi and Vyoma. And so, from the beginning of the chapter, it's been described. Shukadeva Goswami said, the demon Keshi sent by Kamsa appeared in Braja as a great horse. Running with the speed of the mind, he tore up the earth with his hooves. The hairs of his mane scattered the clouds, and the demigods' airplanes throughout the sky, and he terrified everyone present with his loud neighing. This is the kind of sound horse is making. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw how the demon was frightening the village of Gokula by neighing terribly and shaking the clouds with his tail, the Lord came forward to meet him. Keshi was searching for Krishna to fight. So when the Lord stood before him and challenged him to approach, the horse responded by roaring like a lion. So before he was just neighing, now he was roaring when he saw Krishna. Seeing the Lord standing before him, Keshi ran toward him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow up the sky. Rushing with furious speed, the unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. But the transcendental Lord dodged Keshi's blow, and then with his arms angrily seized the demon by the legs, whirled him around in the air, and contemptuously threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths. So it's approximately a couple of football fields or cricket fields. Just as Garuda might throw a snake, Lord Krishna then stood there. Upon regaining consciousness, Keshi angrily got up, opened his mouth wide, and again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled and thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. Keshi's teeth immediately fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron. within Keshe's body, the Supreme Personality's arm, then expanded greatly like a diseased stomach, swelling because of neglect. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Keshe's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, and his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground dead. The mighty armed Krishna withdrew his arm from Keshe's body, which now appeared like a long Karkatika fruit. Apparently, Keshe's body, as acharyas are explaining, was bifurcated, you know. So, apparently, this is what's happening with Karkatika fruit. I never saw one, but I believe the description. Without the least display of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained down from above. My dear king, thereafter Lord Krishna was approached in a solitary place by the great sage among the demigods, Narada Muni. That most exalted devotee spoke as follows to the Lord who effortlessly performs his pastimes. And then the description goes on how Narada Muni, in a very polite but deceiving ways, glorifies Krishna, saying that I am envisioning how you will perform so many pastimes outside of Vrindavan, leading all the way to Dwaraka. And in this way, acharyas are explaining that Narada Muni is reminding Krishna that he should move out of Vrindavan and continue his pastimes in Mathura and Dwaraka. But because he is not one of the confidential associates of the Lord, he cannot tell him directly, "You've forgotten about your mission. Vinashaya chadushkritam." So you have to move out. So in very tricky way, he kind of hints that, yes, I see you're moving out, you'll be defeating, Chanura and Mushtika, killing Kuvalayapida, killing Kamsa, and moving on, and fighting with so many demons. And then Krishna remembers, oh yes, that's true. I did plan to, you know, annihilate all these demons, but it's so nice in Braj, I didn't really want to leave, but yes, I have to fulfill my promise to the whole universe, to Lord Brahma and all the demigods. And so Krishna's duty is calling him out. But this is one of the last demons killed by Krishna in Vrindavan, the very last, which will be assassinated at the exit, will be Vyomasur. And then Krishna will continue his pastimes in Mathura, taken away by Akrura on the order of Kamsa. And so, for us, this description means more than just something which happened over 5,000 years ago. As acharyas are explaining that, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that, these demons in the very early stages, in the very beginning of times, in Satya Yuga, demons and demigods or devotees, they lived on completely different planets, right? Like Indra is living on his planet, and then demons are attacking him, trying to conquer heavenly planets. But as the time goes by, in Treta Yuga, demons and demigods, devotees, They come very close. They live already on the same planet, like Lord Ramachandra with all his devotees lives in Ayodhya, in India, and all the demons with Ravana, they live in Lanka. So same planet, different countries. Now, closer to our times, Dwapara Yuga, demons and devotees, they already live in the same country. They come very close. Krishna with his devotees lives in Vrindavan. And Kamsa and all the demons live in Mathura, which is probably just an hour or so of walking distance, right? So very close. And Acharyas are describing that Kali Yuga means that demons and devotees not only live as next door neighbors, but demon and devotee can very nicely live in the same body. This is the symptom of Kali Yuga. So His Holiness Satswarup Maharaj wrote one book which is entitled Am I Demon or Devotee? And sometimes some of us at least might also ask ourselves this question. Am I demon or devotee? Do we have anyone who ever had this question crossing your mind? Okay. So therefore it is very relevant topic for all of us. And therefore Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that there are 21 obstacles on the major 21 obstacles. There are quite a few minor also. 21 categories also of obstacles on the path to Goloka Vrindavan. And many of those obstacles are represented by the demons whom Krishna killed in Vrindavan, or somehow or other chastised them, punished them. Not everyone was killed. Kaliya was not killed, for example. And even some demigods displayed very demoniac behavior, like Indra. He tried to actually kill Krishna, and all the Brajabasis, and even though he is a very exalted demigod and devotee, we can see that sometimes these demoniac propensities can take over a devotee so much that there is a risk that one may even behave like a demon. And so therefore all these descriptions are very relevant for us, and today we'll be discussing this particular anartha or obstacle of thinking that I'm a great devotee and guru or acharya of everybody else. And so this is a Keshi demon, and we won't be dwelling for too long on the subject, because the most important aspect for us is not the problem but the solution, right? Because as Bhagavad Gita explains, chapter 2, text 59, Mishayavi nivartante nirahara siddhehina rasa varjam rasa pyasya param drishtvani vartate, that we may stay away from sense gratification, but nevertheless it is very artificial because we have taste for sense gratification. But if we experience higher taste, param drishtvani vartate, then we completely lose all interest in sense gratification. That's why we want to dedicate a part, and hopefully larger part, of our presentation to the positive alternative, how to serve Krishna, Guru and Vaishnavas in a perfect way, in a humble and yet powerful way. That's the most amazing thing, that humility and efficiency not only can, but they always match very nicely in devotional service. And this is what we'll be discussing. But before, just literally a few words about this specific anartha, which is very relevant and very subtle, because it is a kind of pride which is resulting not just from a good karma, but from specific devotional achievements. Not just from mundane education, but from knowledge of scriptures. Not from any high position in the mundane realm, but exalted position amongst devotees, right? That a kind of illusion. For example, I'm sitting here on a high seat, right? But if I will start thinking, mistakenly, that just because I'm sitting on the level which is higher than most of the devotees physically, that spiritually I'm also higher. And we can understand that this is the problem which Rama Harshana Sutta had, who was covered by this illusion so badly that he didn't even offer his respects to Lord Balaram himself. And Lord Balaram decided to rectify his consciousness by throwing a blade of grass at him, which actually killed him. Killed him physically, but helped him spiritually. And so, yeah, this is a kind of anartha we are talking about. An impression that I am better than other devotees, and therefore I have to teach other devotees and help them to whatever, advance in devotional service. And there are a few problems with this kind of mentality. And of course, we understand why this mentality is wrong, because, again, according to Bhagavad Gita, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasha ahankaro vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate, that the conditioned soul, bewildered by the three modes of nature, thinks oneself to be a doer of the activities which are actually carried out by the modes of nature, by the three modes of nature. But in devotional service, we also have three modes. Someone may say, how is that? That devotional service is transcendental. Brahma Vaya Kalpate. So, which three modes of devotional service we are talking about? Anyone knows? So in the same way as everything in the material world is guided by the three modes, sattva, rajas, tamas, so in the spiritual world everything is conducted also by the three modes, sat, chit, ananda. So everything is done by the Lord through the media of his energies. And so if I start identifying myself with the results of my activities, I identify myself with God. And so again it becomes material consciousness, material conditioning, and therefore it's the way to fall. It's basically, you know, it's like I may even be, hypothetically, spiritually higher than other devotees, but if I will think that I am higher than other devotees, then the danger is that I can fall down from this height and injure myself very badly, right? And I may even die, because this is material, material ambition to achieve high position. Sometime back, I came across an article about mountain climbers who climb Everest, the highest peak of the planet, which is of course a part of Himalayas. And so Himalayas, Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita Stavavara Himalayam that Himalayas are Krishna. That's Krishna. And so I was thinking, what drives people to climb the mountains? Because it's not only hard work, it's risky. And how risky it is? Well, the article says that the slopes of Everest are literally covered with the bodies of those who never made it, either up or down. And because it's like so cold there, these bodies, they don't deteriorate. They just sit there or lay there for decades together and nothing happens to them, right? Freshly frozen. And it became kind of so pathetic that some of the bodies, they became landmarks for the climbers. Like they say, you know, when you reach 8,000 mark, you will see green boots. Green boots means someone's lying there with green boots on. So if you see green boots, you're 8,000 kilometers, oh no, sorry, 8,000 meters high. Exactly 8 kilometers high. And I was thinking, what drives these people to risk their lives? For what? Just to stand on the head of the Supreme Lord. Right? This is what drives them. Opportunity to stand on the head of God. Right? Because Himalayas are no different from Krishna. But okay, they might do that. They might achieve that goal. Some of the lucky ones, they might even stand on the very peak of the mountain Everest. Of course, most of them, you know, they achieved, by trying to conquer Everest, they rest forever on its slope, right? I'm wondering, you know, why does it called Everest? Maybe there is some connection, kind of warning, you know, don't do that. Otherwise you will rest forever. But, even if someone's standing on the very peak of the mountain, what do they achieve? Okay? Some, glimpse of kind of satisfaction that I've done that. But can they stay on the top? No. Why? For two reasons. Reason number one, it's very cold. Extremely cold. And reason number two, it's very lonely. And can you live your life like that? No, it's not possible. So you have to climb down. And many, actually most of the climbers, they die on the way down. So that's why it says that it's not the fall which kills you, it's a sudden stop at the end. And so, this is the problem with trying to achieve a very high position. You get these two results. It's very cold, means, you know, your relationship with others will be very, very distant and very lonely. And so that's why if someone is trying to achieve that position, we can enjoy life only through relationship. And that's why the process of devotional service is called Bhakti Rasa. This is where the happiness of devotional service lies, in the relationship with the Supreme Lord and with the devotees. And even with others, we also have loving relationship with other living entities who are not devotees, other people. And how our love manifests towards these people? Through compassion, right? We also want them to enjoy the happiness of devotional service. And so this is where the happiness is coming from. But if someone is in that mentality of trying to achieve the greatest height and compete with others, then one will definitely achieve these two results. It will be very cold and very lonely. And therefore, this is very important for us just to know that this is actually the biggest problem with any religion, any religious organization. You will see that's happening all over, that someone is trying to declare himself to be the best of all as opposed to others. And it causes a lot of problems, a lot of frictions. And this particular description which we've read is very interesting in that regard, because Braj, as Vrindavan Dham, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, is the divine abode of the Supreme Lord, which is inhabited by the devotees. And so all the devotees are very happy in Krishna consciousness. But when Keshi comes, he creates complete havoc. He terrifies everyone present with his loud gnawing. And so what is this loud gnawing? That definitely Keshi is not glorifying the Supreme Lord or devotees. He comes in a very negative mood, right? And his mentality is very critical. So he's very critical and very political. So he's trying to kill Krishna and scares his devotees. And so this is what's happening. If someone is trying to declare himself to be the supreme, even in the realm of devotional service, it creates a lot of problems. It becomes very disastrous. And therefore, Krishna has to deal with that. And it's very interesting that when Keshe attacks Krishna, Krishna is not killing him immediately, right? What he does, he is catching, Keshe is trying to kind of trample Krishna with his, you know, hit Krishna with his front legs, with his hooves. And first of all, Krishna dodges his blow, and then he is catching him by the front hooves. And there is a kind of, you know, dancing with Keshe, which is going on. You know, for Keshe, you know, Keshe is really angry and he is trying to kill the Supreme Lord. But for the Supreme Lord, it's a kind of game. It's a kind of pastime. He is playing with Keshe. Of course, it's also mentioned that Krishna is angry, even though he is smiling, but still he is angry with Keshi. Why he is angry? Not because of him, but because Keshi scared devotees in Vrindavan. So Krishna never minds if someone does anything to him. But if someone disturbs his devotees, Krishna becomes angry with that person, and then that person will have problems. So he is catching Keshi, he is not killing him. What he does, he is twirling him around and he is throwing Keshi away. And then basically he gives Keshi a chance to come to his senses, to cool down, right? And to have a second thought and stop creating nonsense, right? Krishna is very merciful. He is not killing Keshi immediately. But Keshi never learns the lesson, and so he is charging at the Lord again with big open mouth. One thing we'll notice about Keshi, that he is a big talker. He makes a lot of noise. Horse has very big mouth, but the ears of the horse are very small, right? So that's demonic mentality, right? Make a lot of noise, but no capacity to listen and hear and understand what's going on, right? Therefore, the remedy for becoming immune to this anartha is very simple. The very first and foundational process in devotional service is shravanam, or hearing. But if someone thinks, oh, I heard enough, now I can only speak, now others have to hear me, then this is demoniac mentality. And this is what we have to be very cautious of. To never think that I've heard enough, now I can only speak, and now others should listen from me. So my participation in devotional programs will be limited to my classes. Because whom shall I listen to anyway, right? I know better than anybody else. So this is already a touch of demonic mentality. And so then, Krishna opens his mouth very wide, and what Keshi opens his mouth very wide, and what Krishna does, he just sticks his hand into his throat. Basically, he tells Keshi, shut up. He gives him another chance. But Keshi never takes that chance to shut up and change his ways. Rather, he persists in his demonic behavior and he bites Krishna's hand with his teeth. And horses have very big teeth. And he bites Krishna above the elbow level. And actually, Keshi's bite leaves a permanent mark on Krishna's. Interestingly, he stuck his left hand into Keshi's mouth, probably because he wanted his right hand to be clean. Deals with demons with the left hand. It's left hand job. But when Keshi beat Krishna above the elbow level, that marks left scars on Krishna's left arm. And of course, we know that Krishna's body is transcendental, and so no one can really leave any marks on Krishna's body without Krishna's sanction. But Krishna allows that to happen, and the reason is very simple. Because Krishna wants to show everybody his, battle marks on the body. You know, it becomes like a memory for the pastime of killing Keshi demon. And so, of course, gopis become very impressed. that Krishna's body is covered with all these scars from fighting with demons. So Krishna is enjoying everything. And so, you know, like in the material world, they say that the scars are man's ornaments. So Krishna also wants to carry these ornaments on his body. But as soon as Krishna bites Krishna's as soon as Kesha bites Krishna's hand, then all his teeth fall out, because his hand is as hot as molten iron. And then, of course, Kesha suffocates and he dies. And so that's the end of this demon. And the most important thing, of course, is counter remedy. How can we never be influenced by the Kesha's mentality? And this demoniac or materialistic mentality is very simple. It can be defined in two words. And these two words are divide and rule. That's the whole philosophy of the material world. Divide and rule. And what is the opposite philosophy? Unite and serve. And so we'll be exploring this particular topic. And we'll connect it to the 50th anniversary of ISKCON, which we're celebrating this year. And it is very important for us to understand what is ISKCON. And I'm sure many of you are familiar with seven purposes of ISKCON. And we'll quickly read this out. First, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Second, to propagate the consciousness of Krishna, God, as it is revealed in the great scriptures of India, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Third, to bring the members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, the prime entity, thus developing the idea within the members and humanity at large that each soul is part and parcel of the quality of Godhead, Krishna. Four, to teach and encourage the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy name of God, as revealed in the teachings of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Five, to erect for the members and for society at large a holy place of transcendental pastimes dedicated to the personality of Krishna. Six, to bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simpler, more natural way of life with a view towards achieving the aforementioned purposes, to publish and distribute periodicals, magazines, books and other writings. So, just by going through those seven purposes, it's very easy to sense the main desire of Srila Prabhupada to unite. You can see that first purpose is to unite, to achieve real unity. The third purpose, bring members of the society together with each other and nearer to Krishna, to unite again. And sixth purpose, to bring the members closer together for a purpose of teaching simpler, more natural way of life. So unity is the prime goal. This is what Gaudiya Vaishnavas live for, to unite the whole world around Krishna. Vasudeva Kutumbakam. This is Vedic aphorism, that the entire world is one family around the Supreme Lord. And we'll be focusing on the very first purpose of ISKCON, because it is very broad and very, we can say, social in nature, non-religious at all, There is not even the word God mentioned in that purpose, what to speak of Krishna, because it's meant for the whole world, whether they believe in Krishna or not. And that is to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large, and to educate all people in the techniques of spiritual life, in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. So re-spiritualize the entire human society for the sake of real unity and peace in the world. And we'll be talking about noble ways to present Krishna consciousness, because, as we understand, the main remedy for remaining in Krishna consciousness, becoming immune to the materialistic influences, is to serve spiritual master, to make service to the spiritual master your life and soul. And we can understand that preeminent Shiksha Guru for all of us, seniors and juniors, gurus and disciples, is Srila Prabhupada. And everyone is successful in Krishna consciousness only to the extent to how much we please Srila Prabhupada, because, as we understand, Srila Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness in a very pristine and pure way. And so whatever Srila Prabhupada wants, we understand this is what Krishna wants, and this is what Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants also. And the premise for the first purpose is actually has very solid basis in our scriptures, such as Srimad Bhagavatam, for example. Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text 16 says, "The Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality retired from the activities of material happiness deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord." And in the end of the purpose, Srila Prabhupada explains, the expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstance. Devotional service is dynamic activity, and the expert devotees can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of the materialistic population. Such transcendental activities of the devotees for the service of the Lord can bring a new order of life to the foolish society of materialistic men. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his subsequent followers exhibited expert dexterity in this connection. By following the same method, one can bring the materialistic men of this age of quarrel into order for peaceful life and transcendental realization. And so we'll be dedicating this slideshow to one single point. What makes Krishna consciousness succeed? Because I'm sure all of you are fired up about Krishna consciousness and giving Krishna consciousness to the whole planet. How many of you want the whole world to become Krishna conscious? Ribo! Some are raising two hands, which is very good. And so, this is a real desire of Srila Prabhupada, to unite the whole world around Krishna, or at least help people to advance spiritually, so that one day they would be able to understand who is Krishna and the value of devotional service. And so, as long as we work in this particular direction, definitely our spiritual advancement will be 100% guaranteed. And we will show in this slideshow we will see how it is happening, what Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport, how expert devotees, beginning from the Supreme Lord himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, exhibited expertise in introducing so many noble ways to give Krishna consciousness to others. So this is Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, who was known in his early age as Nimai Pandit. And so he was teaching Sanskrit grammar. And how he was teaching Sanskrit grammar? He made his lesson completely consisting of the holy names of the Supreme Lord. And so every single rule of grammar he was explaining on the basis of the holy names. And so he invented the way how to make his pupils to chant the holy names under the pretext of learning Sanskrit grammar. And next, when he decided to step up to the greater mission, giving Krishna consciousness to the whole society, he invented very interesting way. Basically, he took sannyas, right? Because in India, sannyasis are still respected. But whom did he took sannyas from? Keshav Bharati. And who was Keshav Bharati? Mayavadi. Woo! And we may ask, why didn't Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being or playing the role of a Vaishnava, as we understand, he got his initiation from Ishwarapuri. So he was initiated by Vaishnav Guru. Why didn't he take sannyas from a Vaishnava sannyasi? There have been Vaishnava sannyasis around. Couple of Vaishnava sannyasis stayed with the Lord in Jagannath Puri, such as Paramananda Puri, for example. So why didn't he take sannyas from a Vaishnava? And the answer is very simple. Because at that time, and unfortunately even now, the most powerful position is held by Mayavadi sannyasis. Even today it is so. I remember a few years back, I think about 10 years back, I was very surprised in Jagannath Puri when I witnessed the very beginning of Ratha Yatra, and the most prominent representatives of the society go onto the chariot before the Ratha Yatra begins to get the blessings of Lord Jagannath. And who is going on Lord Jagannath's chariot first? Shankaracharya from the local math, right? As we know, Shankaracharya has four main headquarters on Indian subcontinent, and one of them is in Jagannath Puri, Govardhan Math. And so the leader of Govardhan Math, together with other Mayavadi sannyasis, they go up the chariot. And only after they get the blessing of Lord Jagannath, only then king goes up the chariot, right? But nobody else can do that. So they are considered to be the most important representatives of Vedic tradition. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided, if I have that position in that circle, I'll have great influence on the society. So he decided, for preaching sake, he took sannyas in the enemy's camp, which was very effective move, as we know, because he got an opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness to the most influential spiritual leaders of the time. Whom he is preaching to? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And how he is preaching to him? By keeping quiet, by not saying one word throughout the whole 7 days. So that's why, and this is how he converted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because he saw. He was not, by the way, even falling asleep you know, hearing lecture for 7 days and not even falling asleep and not getting distracted. And so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was really impressed by that ability of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listened to him for so long, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had to listen to everything Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, right? So that's why it says, first seek to understand, then to be understood, right? First seek to understand, then to be understood. So it shows that Shravanam is the most powerful spiritual process in devotional service. And so we can see that sometimes you can preach. Who was saying that? I heard, I think, one of the Chaupati devotees. Maybe even Radhanath Maharaj says that. We have to preach all the time, but speak sometimes, right? You heard this one, right? So this is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does. He's showing the example in that regard. And this is Ramananda Rai. So how did he preach to Ramananda Rai? By asking him questions, relevant questions. This is another very, very, very powerful technique, very effective technique in communication. Remember this formula for life. One, who can ask the best questions controls the conversation, right? One who can ask the best questions controls the conversation, right? So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows that very powerful method of preaching Krishna consciousness just by asking relevant questions. And now moving through the timeline and coming to Srila Prabhupada, and I hope you understand why do we show all these examples, right? Because they go against the paradigms we have in our mind that to preach you have to be forceful and, you know, push on your ideas upon other people and talk on them, right? No. Sometimes you can very powerfully preach just by listening to people and just by asking them good questions. And now Srila Prabhupada, of course, a traditional follower of Vedic culture and sannyasi, who is never committed one sinful activity in his life, and then his enthusiastic followers, his first disciples, are suggesting that we can preach Krishna consciousness very effectively if we organize a big rock concert. And so they called it Mantra Rock Dance, which was attended by the most famous rock groups of the time. And they requested Srila Prabhupada to come and speak something, to preach on that stage together with all these bands. And Srila Prabhupada agreed. Some devotee joked that Srila Prabhupada on this poster is holding onto his head, maybe thinking, what am I getting myself involved in? But still he did that. And he came to that concert. And he spoke something about Krishna consciousness. But he haven't sang Hare Krishna. He requested that Hare Krishna mantra would be sang by Allen Ginsberg. And who was the Allen Ginsberg? Of course, he was a very famous beatnik poet, but he was very famous for promoting drugs. He was one of the best friends with Timothy Leary, the father of LSD. And so he was promoting LSD, which is one of the most powerful drugs. And he was also very well known for his, sexual non-traditional sexual orientation, I think this is what it's called, right? He was openly that way. And instead of singing Hare Krishna himself, Srila Prabhupada requested him to sing Hare Krishna. So much for the milk touched by the lips of the snake. Right? For Srila Prabhupada it did not matter at all. What Srila Prabhupada counted, that this man is famous, he will sing Hare Krishna, everyone will appreciate it. So, and this was his strategy, and it was successful. And Srila Prabhupada and the Hare Krishna movement became very famous, and he started appearing on the TV shows, radio shows, again sannyasi. What is he doing on TV, radio shows? But Srila Prabhupada did that because he didn't care about his image. He was criticized, not only by outsiders, but by his own godbrothers for his bold preaching, but he didn't care because he was moved by compassion and by the desire to fulfill the instruction of his Guru Maharaj. And for that sake, he was ready to do anything. He was inventing so many novel ways to present Krishna consciousness, following his Guru Maharaj's footsteps. And because he was also very, very innovative, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Anyone can guess what do the locomotive and this room full of senior Vaishnavas have in common? GBC, yes. Because the concept of governing body commission, the concept of joint management of the spiritual movement was taken by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati from the concept of management of Indian railways, governing body commission. So this was never done in history, so he introduced that concept, taking it from railways. And Srila Prabhupada was encouraging people like George Harrison on the picture to introduce Krishna consciousness as wide as possible, even though George Harrison was not able to follow very strictly everything, but Srila Prabhupada didn't care. Again, for him, everything, what mattered was that he was a famous man and people will listen to his words. And actually, it's mostly due to George Harrison's, you know, one famous man, and he made millions of people chant Hare Krishna. And he was very sincere, but he was not able to follow all the regulative principles, which is practically impossible in the kind of circles he was in. But he wanted to drop it all, and he was telling Srila Prabhupada, I want to move to ashram, I want to drop my career. And Prabhupada was not very inspired by that idea. George Harrison was telling, I want to become initiated devotee, and Prabhupada said, you're already the son of Hari, Hari's son, so no problem. So Srila Prabhupada was more interested in introducing Krishna consciousness far and wide. And he himself was not shy to use this stretched limousine, and probably it takes Srila Prabhupada somewhere to the program, and he's looking at his golden Rolex watch, what the time is. As one chapter of Lilamrita says, no one listens to the poor man. This was Prabhupada's statement. So Prabhupada didn't need anything, he was a sannyasi. But for the sake of showing people how to utilize everything for Krishna, he was not shy to use any modern facilities to spread Krishna consciousness. And he was not even bothered by the criticism from the reporters who were saying, aren't you ashamed that disciples are, giving you such a luxurious car? And Prabhupada was saying, what a luxury. It's just a, tin car with little wood on it. I'm the representative of the Supreme Lord. They should be meeting me with a golden car, not with this, little tin car. What is this nonsense? And of course, reporters were completely shocked by that statement. But Prabhupada was never shy. And so, moving on, we can see that the cutting edge Srila Prabhupada's disciple, who actually working very, very hard to fulfill the last wish of Srila Prabhupada. Before his departure, Srila Prabhupada said, half of my job is not finished because the Varnashram is not established. And some people, even in our society, have this simplistic idea that Varnashram is limited to farm projects. But farms are just for Vaishyas. What about Brahmanas, Kshatriyas? What about the most influential people in the society? And so we can see, at least I can see that, from the impartial point of view, from the point of view of independent observer, what Srila Radhanath Maharaj did, he invested a lot of time into training wonderful Brahmanas. As we know, this temple is very fortunate because it has so many devotees who are very strict in following and who are very knowledgeable in Shastra and have wonderful qualities. And after achieving that goal, we can see that Radhanath Maharaj moved on and now he is preaching to the modern Kshatriyas, politicians like Barack Obama, and on the top picture he is talking to British Parliament, to the Lords. And now we can see that he moved on to Vaishyas, addressing very powerful industrialists. And he is not forgetting the Brahmanas of other type. We can see here that he is together on the same function, having very nice relationship with Sri Sri Ravi Shankar and Ramdev Baba and others. Iyengar, they have wonderful relationship with him. He's very close to Dalai Lama 14th. And he was very appreciative of Mother Teresa. And I think he was the first, and to great extent, probably the only, one of very, very few influential ISKCON leaders who have something good to say about everybody. Even Mayavadis, impersonalists, Buddhists. But this is how a devotee is supposed to be. Because what Srila Prabhupada said, devotee is like a bee. He is going for the nectar. He is seeing only good qualities in others. Whereas materialistic people, they are like flies. They only see faults. And so we can see that because Radhanath Maharaj is seeing good qualities in other people, he is getting so many brilliant opportunities to spread Krishna consciousness and achieve the heights others would never even dream of. And so apparently our society mostly consists of two kind of devotees. One, minority, they are really working hard, serving Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, and achieving a lot of success. And others, they cannot show the kind of success, they cannot show the results, but they take as their service to criticize those who actually work hard. They think this is their service. And this is actually Keshe's tendency, which we have to be very mindful of. And he is not even against associating with Shudras for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness, because public entertainers, Hollywood stars and famous people, no matter how highly they are placed in the human society, according to Vedic culture, they are in Shudra category. But Maharaj is encouraging them also, because he knows that few words and little association goes long way for them, and they will introduce so many other people to Krishna consciousness. And this is all what Maharaj cares. So he is exactly like Srila Prabhupada. He only wants to introduce Krishna consciousness to the whole world, and this is his life and soul. And we know that some people are criticizing him, but in the same way as Srila Prabhupada was criticized. But Maharaj doesn't care. Because he knows exactly what he is doing is exactly what Srila Prabhupada wanted. And he was encouraged by the other very innovative preacher and very powerful spiritual leaders, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. We actually know that without Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's encouragement on his deathbed, we would never actually get the opportunity to read The Journey Home. So this was him. And Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was very innovative. We know that he accepted the position of a king while being sannyasi. And we may say, what is this? How sannyasi can be a king? But Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj never cared. He only wanted to have access to the topmost leadership in human society, such as Nelson Mandela and others, to introduce as many people as possible to Krishna consciousness. And in our society, there are many programs which are reaching out to great amount of people, such as Food for Life program. And Krishna consciousness becomes more and more popular in human society. This is what's happening in British schools. Just wanted you to have a sense. Oh, there is no sound, eh? Do we have sound? Microphone? Okay. Yeah, without the sound, whole purpose of the is defeated. Maybe you could just use microphone. Would be easy. Oh, sound is on? Okay. Ah, no, it's not. Can we have microphone on? Okay. You can see that on YouTube yourself, that these pupils, they are chanting Bhaja Govindam and verses from Bhagavad Gita. And so studying Sanskrit becomes very popular in Europe, especially in UK. And because UK is like my second home base, I know quite a lot what's happening there. And many of you would know about Krishna Avanti schools, which are very amazing achievements, because these are government schools, government-funded schools, so-called Hindu schools, which are actually purely Krishna-conscious schools, because they have deities, they have prasadam, and they have purely devotional curriculum. And this lady in blue with the hat, this is Queen of England, because they founded the first school, she came to see what's happening, and they placed her at the, right in front of the deities, make sure she gets darshan. They didn't ask her to remove shoes though. She was sitting with her shoes on, which some people might also criticize. But she really appreciated everything. And in the end, she was given a picture of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the temple president of Bhaktivedanta Manor, Shruti Dharma Prabhu, said, "Our children are taught according to the principles of our founder saint, Sri Chaitanya. They are taught Trinada Pisunichana, to be humble, to be tolerant, and to be very respectful, and never expect any respect for themselves." To which the queen said, "This is so wonderful. We should have these schools all over the country." And now, instead of one school, there are 9 schools. Government-funded schools. Can you imagine? Government is paying not only for the construction, but all the salaries. And all the children are taught so nicely. Every time I come to London, I see very small children playing so expertly musical instruments, pridanga, karatal, harmonium. I'm asking, how did they learn? And the answer is Avanti School. And so UK government actually gave for Krishna Avanti School a lot of money. I mean, it's more, by up to the date, it's more than $30 million, over £20 million, which I don't think we ever received so much money from the government anywhere, probably not even in India, right? And there are so many school trips which come to the temple to learn about Hinduism in the light of Krishna consciousness. And devotees have opportunity to learn, to preach in schools, teaching, officially teaching Krishna consciousness in public schools, and they are paid for that. And they are paid so nicely, they can do few classes a week and not worry about their maintenance at all. Anyone wants to know how all these opportunities became possible? Anybody is interested? Very simple. That devotees connected with other Hindu groups in the country, and they created Hindu Forum of Britain. And by that cooperation, other groups, they said, "Well, you are the most active in introducing Hinduism to everybody, so you be our leaders, you be our representatives." And suddenly, devotees, just from having very, insignificant position of one exotic religious group amongst thousands, if not tens of thousands across the country, became representatives of the entire spectrum of Hinduism for UK. And so this is how they got these opportunities, to have government-funded schools and introducing Krishna consciousness officially on government level under the banners of Hinduism. So this is the secret of success: networking with other people. This is what's happening. And there are also wonderful examples in the West, how devotees are introducing kirtan in yoga schools. This is Sri Prahlad Prabhu, one of my good friends. He becomes very popular as kirtan singer in yoga schools. And in the West, there are so many people who hold bhakti festivals. In America, these bhakti festivals, they gather thousands of people. And first, when I heard about them, I thought these are devotees organizing these festivals. But then I learned that devotees don't even participate in these festivals. What to speak of organizing them? There are so many other people. musicians and other spiritual people, they just come together to sing Hare Krishna. Because Hare Krishna mantra becomes so popular all over the planet. Luckily now devotees do participate. Now Radhanath Maharaj goes to those festivals regularly and my Guru Maharaj. So, but this is very interesting that it shows that if we will not wake up and start actively introducing Krishna consciousness, Lord Chaitanya will choose somebody else to do the job. And we'll be just, you know, left behind, wondering what happened. How come everyone sings our mantra? Everyone's preaching our philosophy? Everyone's promoting our lifestyle? And this is Russia. I'm sure some of you would know that Russia has the biggest rate of spreading Krishna consciousness growth outside of India. Thousands of people taking up to Krishna consciousness every year. Anyone wants to know how this becomes possible? Very simple, that devotees conduct courses to the people, lectures and self-help courses based on psychology, astrology, and health, healthy lifestyle and relationships, especially family relationships. That's very popular. And we know that these self-help courses are very, very popular all over the world. And apparently, this is a brilliant opportunity to introduce Krishna consciousness on massive scale anywhere, including India. In India, it's also very popular. Because whatever is popular in the West becomes popular in India. And so, there are many leaders, leading devotees who are taking part in this development, and they call it Psychology 3000. And this particular devotee, Audarya Dhamma, some say that he is accountable for 80% growth of Russian communities in the past 10 years because he is a very successful preacher. And there are so many devotees in Russia who follow that. And actually this devotee, his books are even translated into English language even though he is Russian by origin, that he is preaching all over the world. And this is Shilendra Dumnaswamy, my spiritual master. He is very active in interfaith circles because his understanding is very interesting. That he says it doesn't matter what kind of spiritual practice people follow, as long as they follow. So they have to be encouraged to follow their path because eventually once they become advanced, they will come to Krishna. And so he is making a lot of friendship with so many religious and spiritual leaders in other countries. This is from South Africa. And he invented a concept of spiritual cohesion. And under those banners, he conducted the biggest Ratha Yatra outside of India on the planet, which gathered more than 200,000 people just in 3 days. And because he invited so many other spiritual leaders and political leaders. And it became so successful that the city administration of Durban, one of the biggest cities in South Africa, they contacted him and they said, it's a wonderful idea to have this spiritual cohesion festival for everybody. And of course, everyone gets prasadam and everyone gets Prabhupada's books and chanting of the holy name. But, you know, the concept is social. And they said, this time you paid for it, and now we give you more than $1 million. And we want you next year to conduct a festival for minimum 500,000 people. So, and for that he contacted, this is President of South Africa, Mark Zuma. They discussed the idea of the festival and spiritual cohesion with him. He was very enthusiastic about it. And Maharaj is traveling to very remote places like Mongolia to introduce Krishna consciousness there, and he makes friends with everybody. These are Buddhist monks, and because devotees knew that Maharaj is so keen on interfaith dialogues, they organized a dialogue between him and Buddhist monks in one of the most prominent monasteries in Mongolia. And I was there, and when we came, and then this abbot of the monastery came together with other monks, and I could see tension on his face, because he was thinking, why these Hare Krishnas have come? Do they want to convert us into their faith or not? But after Maharaj started talking to him, the man got completely relaxed, because Maharaj said, we came just because we wanted to do something for you, to serve you, because we are so impressed with Buddhist culture in this country. And this monk, he said, you know, why are you so impressed with Buddhist culture? You are Hare Krishnas, you belong to a completely different culture. And Maharaj said, no, first of all, Buddhist culture and Buddhist philosophy is very close to us, that we both understand and accept concepts of karma, reincarnation, compassion and kindness towards others is our shared belief and value. And after all, we accept Lord Buddha as incarnation of Krishna. We accept Lord Buddha as the Supreme Lord. And Buddhist monk was little puzzled, and he said, this is very interesting, because we also accept Krishna as manifestation of Buddha. And Maharaj said, you see, you have so much in common. And so we actually have common goal, which is to save the society from degradation. And I can see that people who are following this Buddhist culture, they live very simple, very pure lifestyle. And we want to help you to restore that Buddhist culture. And so if we could do something, we'll be very grateful. And this abbot became very impressed. He said, if you have such a broad-minded understanding, you can actually lecture to our monks and even congregation. And Maharaj said, well, let us do something for you first. And the abbot, he was thinking for a few seconds, and then he said, okay, actually, I know that you are Hare Krishnas, you are really good in chanting mantras, and your chanting mantras is very attractive, because, you know, you're playing very nicely musical instruments, and we also want to learn how to chant mantras very attractively. So can you chant your mantras for us? And we didn't expect that turn, and so we had to go to the cars and bring all the instruments, and Bada Haridas Prabhu conducted beautiful kirtan. But before, he said, we have our main mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, but before we chant this mantra, we chant mantra to the spiritual master, to the guru, Srila Prabhupada. And this monk said, of course, we always chant mantra to the guru first before we chant our main mantra also. And because they know Sanskrit, and they were so sharp that this abbot, just by listening mantra, he remembered it and repeated it. He sang with us. He chanted pranam mantra of Srila Prabhupada together with the devotees. And so after maybe half an hour of very ecstatic kirtan, we've stopped, and then Maharaj said, we also want to chant one other special protection mantra for your monastery. And Buddhists, they love protection mantras. And so they were so ecstatic hearing Nrisingadev pranam mantra that they actually, you know, it was very hard to break away, to leave them. They wanted to take pictures with us. They were embracing the devotees. And their main question was, when are you coming back? So, and these people have a lot of influence in the country. And so making friends with them goes very long way. And therefore Maharaj had very amazing opportunities. He actually spoke on the central television for 5 days in a row, explaining the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness in depth. More than 1 hour each session. And so, in the conclusion, we wanted to quote from Bhagavad Gita, very amazing verse, which is chapter 4, text 24, which explains what does it mean, spirituality. What is spirituality? Brahmarpanam brahmahavi brahmagno brahmanahutam brahmatanaiva gantavyam brahmakarma samadhina, which says a person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom, because if his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. And we're not going to read the whole purport, but the essence of it is very simple, that everything is spiritual because everything is Lord's energy. But our goal, our duty as devotees, is to convert this energy back into the Lord's service. This is what Krishna consciousness is. This is our goal, to show people and to help them to use everything for Krishna. As is shown by Srila Prabhupada, we can see that Srila Prabhupada is chanting next to Jagannath Swami, and he introduced Lord Jagannath to the whole world. Why? Because Jagannath Swami is very special deity. Again, connecting back to the first purpose of ISKCON, real unity and peace in the world based on spiritual knowledge and spiritual practices. And for those of you who don't know, Jagannath Swami is the first and the oldest interfaith deity in the history of the planet. Because Jagannath Swami is worshipped by Buddhists, they see Jagannath as manifestation of Buddha. Of course, the standards for Jagannath Swami were established by Shankaracharya himself, and no one, not even Ramanujacharya, could change those standards, no matter how hard he tried. And we know that there are many Muslim devotees of Jagannath. We know that the Gurudwara in Jagannath Puri is dedicated to very historical and properly documented event, how Guru Nanak was chanting mantra, was doing kirtan together with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally. Two of them were doing kirtan in Jagannath Puri for Jagannath. And we also, probably few of you heard, that the lost years of Jesus Christ, quite a large part of those years, he was in India and studying Krishna consciousness in Jagannath Puri temple. So we understand that Jagannath Swami historically unites all faiths. And this is one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada wanted Jagannath Ratha Yatra to be celebrated all over the world, just by helping us to understand that he wanted that unity of the whole world around Krishna. And so Chaupati temple has the best potential for that, and already few devotees doing that, helping Srila Radhanath Maharaj to reach very influential people in the society. And so India also should not be forgotten. It's a very important country. And so we just showed this slideshow to share very few sample ideas how Krishna consciousness becomes successful, so that you could take these ideas and apply them in your own preaching fields. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Okay. I think we went a bit over time. And so, but if there are any questions, I'll be very happy to answer those questions individually. I'm available, but we'll finish in our traditional way by doing 5 minutes of kirtan. Okay, there are announcements.
Hare Krishna. Please sit down. Krupaya baith jaiye. There are some few announcements. First of all, we would like to welcome those guests who have come to our Sunday Feast program for the very first time. Hum sabse pehle un sabhi bhakton ka swagat karna chahenge jo is mandir mein pehli baar aaye hain. Our reception team of devotees near Hanumanji's deities will welcome you to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir by offering you the special Mahaprasad of their Lordship Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ji. And if you have any questions regarding Krishna consciousness in general or this temple in particular, they'll be very happy to answer.